The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vora. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vora.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. Yesterday evening, I had the honor of being able to deliver the Libertarian Party's official response to the State of the Union Address. And since then, both me and the Libertarian Party have been flooded with questions about many of the proposals that we put forward in our response. Our response really begins with looking at Obama's plan on education. As you saw in his presentation, Obama wants to make community college just as free and universal as our public schools. Now, while on the surface that may have some initial appeal, the two things that come up are, first, our public schools aren't that good, and expanding that completely failed boondoggle is probably not the best idea for education. But the second part is more subtle. The second part makes us ask a fundamental question, which is this: why has higher education become so unaffordable in the first place? If you look at the components of higher education, they haven't become more expensive. Computers cost less than they used to. Printing costs has made the printing of textbooks and materials cheaper and easier than it's ever been in all of human history. None of the components cost any more. And yet, over the last decades, college tuition has increased by 3 times the rate of inflation. What has enabled that? What has allowed colleges to do that? A restaurant can't do that. If a restaurant increased its prices at 3 times the rate of inflation without increasing its quality, that restaurant would certainly go out of business. If a clothing company did the same thing, it would probably go out of business. If a private school did the same thing, it would go out. I mean, if any organization did that, if any business did that, it would drive itself out of business. So what's the difference? The difference is this: that price skyrocketing has been enabled by federal college subsidies. What do I mean by federal college subsidies? Well, the biggest one is our federal student loan program. Imagine for a second if tomorrow the federal government stopped all financial aid to universities, all federal financial aid. Now, of course, if a university wanted to provide financial aid based on its own resources, that's completely different. But we stopped all federal financial aid. We ended all federal guaranteed student loans. We ended every single subsidy, every federal regulation on colleges. Let's look at what would happen. There might be a few colleges that could maintain their current rates. Those colleges would probably become havens only for the ultra wealthy, and those colleges would suffer. Because a big part of what makes a college a strong intellectual community is its diversity. And a college that can only attract the richest of the richest is not going to have that kind of educational and intellectual diversity. So what would a college have to do? What would colleges have to do if all of that free government money was taken away tomorrow? What if that program was shut down tomorrow? They would have no choice. They would have two choices. One choice is lower your rates, and the other choice is go out of business. Those would be the only two choices. And while some of the old colleges that refused to adapt would go out of business, I predict that many new colleges would come in to take their place. New colleges that better knew how to manage their financial resources. New colleges that knew how to manage their teaching resources in a way that was cost-effective and cost-efficient. Student debt, the massive student debt that we have today, would be a thing of the past. For example, if college tuition was only $7,000 a year, it would be impossible to have $100,000 in debt after 4 years. You just couldn't do it. In fact, if college was that low, parents wouldn't spend their children's entire childhood saving for college. They wouldn't need to scrimp and save and not support other businesses and charities and the arts and science research. They wouldn't have to avoid supporting all those different areas because they were saving up money to spend on a federally inflated college tuition. Most people would be able to afford college easily. Others would maybe struggle a little bit more, but the crippling debt that so many students graduate with now would be gone. That huge student debt would be gone. You would graduate and you would be free. You would graduate and the money that you earned would go to you. You could use it to spend it how you wanted to instead of to pay off the interest on your $50,000 or $100,000 student loans. The proposal to make community college free for 2 years is going to have the same consequences that free public education has had. High costs, overregulation, and low quality. Because as sure as we know anything about government money, it always comes with strings attached. And those strings always lower quality. Those are strings that pull down the quality of whatever it is that they're attached to. Whether those strings are something like Common Core, where federal mandates are attached to so much funding that they're essentially leveraging states to use an ineffective and backward system. I believe that the correct direction for public education is for it to become private. I believe that the first step in maintaining or creating an excellent world-class education in America is to first get the federal government out of it by shutting down the Department of Education, by completely ending Common Core, by removing all regulations and restrictions that get in the way of high-quality education. But we can't stop there. It's not enough to get rid of the federal Department of Education. That's just a tiny first step. The second step is we need to get all regulations out of education. All straight regulation on private education have to go. That begins with getting rid of truancy laws. If you're a parent and you want to have your child one-on-one tutored by Bill Gates in computer science, you know what? That probably doesn't meet the educational requirements in many states. In fact, until Bill Gates got his bachelor's degree, an honorary bachelor's degree, it wouldn't have even met the requirements in my home state of Maryland. The correct step, eliminating truancy laws, will make sure that parents have the choice to use whatever means they want to educate their kids. Learning centers, alternative forms of education, online schooling, traditional schooling, whatever parents see fit. Because you know what? No one's going to know more about a child, and certainly no one's going to care more about a child than a parent. That's the person who should be making all the decisions. Not some of the decisions, not 99% of the decisions. 100% of the decisions should be the parents' decision, and 0% of the decisions should be the government's decisions. Shutting down the federal Department of Education, followed by shutting down state departments of education, is what's going to give us a world-class education. It's going to drive down costs. It's going to get rid of these regulations that drive up costs. It's going to get rid of the subsidies that drive up costs. Now, if we get the government completely out of education, that's where we're going to really see an amazing improvement in education. Because real quality doesn't only come from choice. It comes from two things. It comes from choice and it comes from responsibility. See, if you don't have to pay for something, you will never put as much thought and as much effort as you will if you do have to pay for it. And if there's one thing that's free and something else that costs a lot more, you may be tempted to use that free, lower quality thing. Now, of course, in the case of public school, it's not really free. It's just you're forced to pay for it through taxes. But what if you weren't? What if you didn't have to pay those taxes? What if you could take that money and spend it on whatever education you wanted to? I bet that parents would find a way to make sure that their kids were getting the best kind of education for their children. It's not going to be the same for every child. It never is. But it will be the same, or it will be the right education, the individualized education, the kind of education that that specific child needs. And it might be different from every other child. It might be different from that child's twin brother or sister. But it will be the right type of education because it'll be made, the decisions will be made by the right people. The belief that we need the government to provide free education is further ridiculous. The private sector already provides free education. You have Khan Academy, you have Coursera, you have MIT OpenCourseWare, and those are just some of the more famous examples. You go on YouTube, there's free education on every topic. If you want to learn how to solve a Rubik's Cube, you can go to YouTube and learn how to do that. You want to learn how to do the derivative in a calculus problem, you know, a YouTube video will show you how to do that. There is so much free online education already. What the government is actually doing, it's not adding education. Right now, the government is preventing individuals from accessing that free education. One of the more famous debacles was Minnesota's ban on Coursera, which was eventually overturned when so many libertarian activists fought back against it, saying, "How dare you tell people that they cannot access free education?" But it hasn't stopped. Right now, trade sanctions are preventing people from sanctioned countries, Iran, Syria, from using free online American education. Does the president really think that bombs, violence, threats, and sanctions are going to bring people together more than shared education? Nothing is a more powerful uniting force than education, with the possible exception of trade, which those sanctions also ban. I mean, getting rid of those sanctions will connect Americans and people in other countries through bonds of trade and through a shared education. Now, if you want to make some of these things happen, talking about it is not enough. You need to get involved. That means you need to go to lp.org/states and get involved in a campaign in your state. We can make this happen. But the first step is going to lp.org/state and getting involved. You might decide to volunteer for a campaign. You might work at different booths. You might work on social media. You might even decide to run for office. But the first step is go to lp.org/states. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Want to help make our world a better place, but not sure where to start? Tune into Better Worldians Radio with the creators of the social game on Facebook called A Better World. Join hosts Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel, who will inspire you to make a big difference in small ways. They'll speak to experts, authors, volunteers, and everyday people who are changing the world daily. Better Worldians Radio is heard live every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Variety.
Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety. Listen for Trust Across America every week on the Voice America Variety Channel. Tune in as host Jordan Kimmel is joined by national experts in the fields of accounting, finance, organizational behavior, and sustainability, as well as companies that are applying strategies that are enabling them to be recognized as doing the right thing by the American Trust Awards. Your host, Jordan Kimmel, is himself a trusted professional with years of experience in applying strategies and consulting with today's leading firms. Trust Across America is heard Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com. This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
One of the most important forms of education when it comes to the modern job market is on-the-job training. As everybody knows, employers seek people who have work experience. Because when it comes right down to it, work experience is often a bigger indicator of somebody's work responsibility than purely academic training. When you raise the minimum wage, as the president wants to do, you make it more expensive to hire new people. So you're not going to take a risk. You're not going to give people opportunity who don't already have, wouldn't normally have opportunity. If the minimum wage is high, you're only going to give a job or offer a job to a person who's much more surefire. But let's look at the reverse. Let's say we got rid of the entire minimum wage. Well, who's that going to help? It's going to help the people who are trying to enter the job market. It's going to help them build their resumes. It's going to help them build their credibility and work experience. A lot of those people who are choosing, instead of going to college and having a negative wage of $50,000 a year, are choosing to have a positive, although small, wage in through which they will develop the skills that are most useful for them. The Republican response to this, which is leave it to the state or leave it to every state, is preposterous. It's a complete cop-out. All minimum wages hurt the poor. All minimum wages hurt the young who are trying to get their first job, trying to get a foothold in the market. All minimum wages hurt felons who are former felons who are trying to get their lives back on track. Every single minimum wage in the country does that. The minimum wage is not good in some places and bad in other places. It always hurts the poor no matter what. Just like socialized medicine was bad when Romney did it in Massachusetts and it's bad when Obama did it for the entire country, minimum wage is a problem wherever it is. The first thing we need to do is repeal the minimum wage in every state. But the question is this: have the Republicans done that? There are states that are Republican controlled. There are states where Republicans have the governors that have we have a Republican where there's a Republican governor, where there is a Republican legislature. And even those states have the minimum wage. The Republicans have refused to repeal the minimum wage. On the positive side, we have so many libertarian candidates who pledged last election and are pledging in 2015 and will certainly pledge in 2016 to completely repeal the minimum wage, either in a state or, if God forbid there a new one's passed, they'll repeal that minimum wage too. The correct answer is to completely eliminate all wage restrictions. Let people gain experience. Let people get a better education. The Republicans have complained about Obamacare, which I believe is correct. I mean, it's correct to say that Obamacare has problems, but they've refused to defund it. See, that's the well-guarded secret, is the House of Representatives can choose to defund anything. When they controlled the House, the Republicans could have completely defunded Obamacare, but they refused to. Why? Because, like any government program, Obamacare benefits political cronies of the Democrats and political cronies of the Republicans. We have libertarian candidates in every state that are pledging to completely repeal Obamacare. Not repeal it and replace it the way the Republicans talk about it. I'm not, it seems that the only thing they want to replace it with is with Romney Care or something worse. I mean, repeal it and replace it with free market health care. Get rid of all these subsidies, regulations, and other forms of government interference that get in the way of low-cost, high-quality health care. For those who, like me, recognize that the war on drugs, that the drug prohibition in America has had such a profoundly damaging effect, who have seen that drug prohibition increases violent crime, it funds violent cartels because of the huge black market profits, it makes people afraid to seek help with an addiction, it destroys lives for no reason, it fills up our prisons. We have more African-American men in prison today than there were slaves during slavery. All of these nonviolent offenders have no business in prison. But here's the fact. This is not something that requires, you know, a united president and Congress or anything like that. One person can end the drug war. One single person can completely end the war on drugs, and that's the president. All he needs to do is pardon every single nonviolent drug offender. And then he needs to pledge that he's going to do that with every other nonviolent drug offender that gets imprisoned without any legitimate justification. If you didn't hurt anybody, if you didn't steal from anybody, if you didn't harm anybody else, then you did not commit a crime and you have no business in prison. And whatever excuses the president's going to give about that are complete nonsense. He has the ability to end the war on drugs today, and he is choosing not to. On the flip side, many libertarian presidential candidates, including our most recent presidential candidate, Gary Johnson, pledged to pardon all nonviolent drug offenders. At the same time, so many libertarian congressional and senatorial candidates pledged to completely end the war on drugs. That includes completely abolishing the DEA, releasing all nonviolent drug offenders, and cutting taxes accordingly. We're talking about $500 per filing. That means any time a person's filing taxes, that's going to be $500 less that you're going to have to waste on the counterproductive and damaging government sector. That's $500 that you might be able to, that you might spend at a local restaurant, at a local school, at a local movie theater, at a local place of business. It's money that you might donate to science research. It's money that you might use to support a charity, that you might use to support the arts. There's so much good that can come out of that money. But instead, we're using that money, the government's taking that money from you and using it to destroy the lives of your fellow citizens. Let's put a stop to that. The single biggest area, the single most damaging area right now, the worst thing that the federal government is doing right now, is its military misuse and overuse. Libertarian candidates have pledged to completely end all military foreign actions, to shut down foreign military bases, to dramatically reduce the size and the spending of the military, to cut military spending by 60% or more. What happens if we do that? Well, the first thing that happens is all of us has a lot more money. We have more money that we can use to spend how we see fit and to support what we see fit. If you don't believe that violence is the universal answer to all problems, you can find other ways to work. You can work with humanitarian groups. You can work with educational groups, groups like Coursera that would be providing education to men and women all over the world if they weren't being blocked by the federal government. But the other thing is we would be safer, and here's why we'd be safer. There's two reasons. One, when you focus on one task, you do it well. When you focus on 1,000 tasks, you usually don't do any of them well, and that applies to the military just as well. When the military focuses exclusively on defense, it gets pretty good at defense. If it focuses on nation building and setting up puppet governments and trying to protect everybody in the world from everybody else and be some kind of a world police, it doesn't really do any of that well. It hasn't done that well. It hasn't done that well at all. It's created many, many problems and solved very, very few, if any. The other thing that's going to make us safer is this. We're not going to be creating enemies through military action. We're going to stop making enemies. We're going to start making friends, because you know what makes friends? Trade makes friends. You might have a completely different personality, completely different value system from a person, but if trading with that person benefits you and benefits him, you're going to find a way to work together. Trade is the path to peace. Trade isolationism is completely counterproductive. Military intervention is completely counterproductive. We have no business trying to meddle in the affairs of foreign nations. The libertarian answer to so many of these problems is going to make our lives better. In healthcare, it's going to give us lower cost, higher quality healthcare. It's going to give us lower cost and higher quality education at a much lower tax rate. And if we bring all these things together, if we can cut spending to 1998 levels, we can eliminate the personal income tax. Think about that. No more tax returns. No more tax payments. All of that money is kept. You keep it and you spend it how you see fit. You can support the charities that work instead of being forced to support counterproductive government social welfare. You can support arts in a way that actually makes sense to you instead of being forced to fund the National Endowment for the Arts. You can support the science research that you want to support instead of being forced to support federal boondoggles. You can support ways to connect with other nations instead of being forced to support the federal government's militaristic intervention. And all that begins with one important step. Because here's the thing, no one can do this alone. The federal government is huge. Right now it's sucking out half of the GDP and putting it to counterproductive uses. It has a lot of power, but you know what? We also have a lot of power. But we need to put that power together. We need to get organized, and the first step is you got to get to lp.org/states. You need to find out how to get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state. You might work on social media. You might work at booths. You might make phone calls. You might even decide to run for office and make the greatest contribution you possibly can to the cause of liberty. But the first step of that is getting to lp.org/states and getting involved in the Libertarian Party in your state. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you're listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
It's time to take a new look at some of life's changing moments. It's time to listen to an expert who has been there and can provide insight through experience, studies, and enlightening guests. Tune in to Illuminating Now, Lindsay's Life Secrets. Host Lindsay Levinson takes a look at relationships, parenting, health and wellness, divorce, depression, sexuality, philanthropy, and mental health. You'll look at everything you know in a different way. Illuminating Now, Lindsay's Life Secrets, airs Wednesdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
Are you a business innovator or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. In a few minutes, we'll be talking about ballot access. But first, let's take a look at some of the other important parts of President Obama's State of the Union address. One of the biggest issues is that President Obama continues to believe that the federal government is better able to manage your life, to manage all of our lives, than we are. But the thing is, there's no truth to that. Look at how they mismanage their own finances. If any individual attempted to manage their, if a child did any of that, they would obviously be grounded forever. I mean, we're talking about a $4 trillion budget. Now, when Republicans and Democrats look at the budget, what parts of the budget they can cut, they look primarily at what they call the, quote, discretionary part of the budget. But here's the fact. Every single part of the budget is completely discretionary. And here's the thing. They don't want us to be able to cut those parts of the budget. So you know what they do? They prevent libertarian candidates in every way they can. They try to shut us out of debates. In fact, they even try to shut us out of the ballot. They make it impossible for libertarian voters to vote for libertarian candidates. They try to do whatever they possibly can. My next guest is Paul Frankel. Now, Paul Frankel is an expert at ballot access. He's been working with ballot access initiatives all over the country. And he has made so many improvements. He's done so much work to help libertarians get on the ballot so that libertarian voters are able to vote their conscience. So we're going to bring Paul on the show now. Paul, can you hear me?
Hello.
Paul, thank you so much for being on the show today. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on, what went on in 2014 in terms of ballot access. What were some of the states where either Republicans or Democrats tried to put up extremely high barriers to getting to allowing Libertarian Party members on the ballot?
Well, there's a couple of different aspects to that. Actually, a lot of different aspects, but one is the statutory requirements, which okay. is just like an outrageous number of signatures. For example, in Oklahoma, which is not a high population state, and where you need around 50,000 valid signatures just to get on the ballot statewide.
So we're talking about a relatively, I mean, it's a big state. It's not very populated, so it's sparsely populated.
Yeah, the difficulty, so I mean, in comparison to the state population, it's an extremely high requirement. You know, it's a place where there's a lot of bad weather. It's gets hot in the summer, cold in the winter, rainy and windy pretty much any time of year. It's not an easy place to work outdoors. There's not a lot of rights as far as where you can go to get signatures, and there's also a lot of competition for locations. And it's not a state where it makes a lot of sense, even for the establishment parties that have misguided fears that we're taking votes away from them, because it's a state which is so heavily lopsidedly Republican Obama did not win a single county. It was something like 2-1 Republican. So they've got absolutely nothing to fear. Those fears are misguided in the first place, because despite what the Republicans and much of the mainstream media will say that we're getting Republican votes, really the actual studies and polls and exit polls repeatedly show that it's about even, and we also get a lot of people that wouldn't vote at all to vote Libertarian. But even if what they're claiming was true, it wouldn't be an issue in Oklahoma or here in Alabama. There's another state where, we would need around 40,000 valid signatures to get on statewide. Fortunately, we were able to get a few counties on the ballot, but it turned out that we thought we could also run a congressional and some legislative candidates off of that same petition, and they said that they would each need a separate petition for every office. So the only candidates we were able to run were all for countywide and county commission offices. And even so, this is the first time since 2002 that we've had more than one Libertarian candidate on the ballot in Alabama at all. All the presidential candidates have been on, but as independents without a party label, because it's about nine times easier to get on as an independent candidate than as a party. And there's been one single legislative district where we had a partisan Libertarian candidate in 2006. And other than that, in the last dozen years, this was the first time that we had Libertarian candidates on the ballot at all.
What do you think that either the Republicans and Democrats or the special interests that support them, what do you think they're exactly afraid of?
Well, a lot of what they're afraid of is that our ideas will gain traction. Because if our candidates are out there on an equal playing field, there's a lot of people that are sick and tired of the Democrats and Republicans. The opinion polls are showing that actually a majority of the people out there don't feel like those choices are adequate. There's a lot of big money interests that stand to lose a lot because they gain a lot of wealth and power because of special advantages that are given to them by government. And a lot of government employees that draw their paychecks and a lot of government contractors that draw their paychecks due to government, basically interfering in people's lives and their business and their economic and personal lives. There's large military contractors that benefit from the U.S. spending more on the military than the rest of the world combined, and having hundreds of bases in pretty much every country in the world. There's the giant prison police industrial complex, and all the corporations that have government contracts and that keep their competition from being able to rise up with all the red tape that really strangles small and upstart competition from rising up to challenge them in the first place. There's all kinds of interests, people that want to dictate other people's personal choices because they don't like other people's lifestyles or orientations or ways to relax, or their other people's religion or whatever their hang-up is. There's a lot of different reasons, but it's not just us. It's just other ideas aside the establishment in general, whether it be the Greens or the Socialists or the ultra-conservative, whatever it is that's not part of the establishment, go along, get along, one hand washes the other, too big to fail club. They don't like having the diversity of ideas out there because then people say, well, maybe these, and people are saying, these big choices aren't good enough, maybe I'll choose something else. And a lot of people are, the only reason why they will vote for a Democrat or Republican is because they're afraid of the other one. But more and more people are waking up and saying, look, whether it's a left boot or a right boot on our neck, it doesn't matter. It's still a boot on our neck. And it's the same tyrant behind that boot, regardless of which boot it is. The other thing I wanted to say earlier about when you were saying some of the states is that some of the states, it's not even just a matter of the law itself in terms of the number of signatures, but actually the way the law is applied. In Ohio, they actually duped a registered, well, I don't know if it's registered, somebody that had voted in the Libertarian primary and was considered a Libertarian voter. They duped this guy and said, oh, we've got a bunch of Democrats out there getting signatures for Libertarians. Why don't you sign this complaint saying it should really be Libertarians getting signatures for Libertarians? In reality, what it was one or two signatures were gotten by these issue coalition partners that Libertarians had helped with getting marriage equality or marijuana decriminalization initiatives on the ballot. In Ohio, and they turned around and got us like a very, very tiny handful of signatures, really a trivial number. And on that basis, they got this guy duped into signing this complaint, which ended up throwing us off the ballot too late for us to actually even file as a write-in in our own primary. So we were kept off the ballot for the only statewide offices, which would have allowed us to retain ballot access for elections in Ohio for the next election. They enforced a guideline which said that the people getting signatures had to put down the Libertarian Party as their employer. But that's very ambiguous because it had never been enforced before, and because we're actually not their employer. They're independent contractors. So if they had put down the Libertarian Party as their employer, they might have came back and said, well, you guys are independent contractors. You put down the Libertarian Party as your employer, so we're going to throw you off on that basis. You know, all the people that had worked in Ohio for many years and had always left that part blank, or they were told it's okay to leave it blank, all of a sudden that rule's getting enforced. And in Illinois, they sent out armed goons to try to intimidate people into saying they hadn't signed the petition, or that the person who signed off as a circulator, because all of the people gathering the signatures have to sign off and notarize the petitions. You know, they came in and said, we want you to sign this, saying that that you didn't sign this petition, or that the petition was misrepresented, or that the person that said that had you sign it was not the person that had you sign it. And then when we won that case, they kept appealing it. They actually used security guards with guns on their hips and intimidation. And Illinois is a state where it's very difficult for a regular person to even be allowed to carry a firearm. So, you know, it's a very intimidating thing when, you know, some large guy with a gun comes to their door. You know, they make it, some of these might be ex-cops or off-duty cops, or, you know, people that kind of present themselves as being in a position of authority.
Sure.
And then they were also calling up the people that signed off the petitions. They had these armed guys coming to their doors if they lived in Illinois, or they got them on interviews for a court deposition if they were outside of Illinois, and trying to ask them all kinds of ridiculous questions to try to trip them up, like, oh, why did you register this blog with an address in so-and-so state? Or why does your tax return from 10 years ago saying you were living at this address, and your ID says you live at that address, and you signed off the petition with this address? Well, you know, people move around. Some people don't always live in the same place. They may use different addresses for different things.
Sure.
There really is no need for a sign-off on petitions. You know, there should be no reason why somebody can't pass it around from one person to the next, or mail it in for themselves or for a few of their neighbors, or leave it taped to a light post or on a store counter with different employees coming in and out. Why does it need to have a signed off a notarized signature. You know, they had all kinds of rules in Illinois about who can circulate and who can sign. If you got a person that signs their own petition or notarizes their own petition or is a candidate on a petition, they throw out not just that signature, but hundreds or thousands of other signatures.
Wow.
If a notary makes a mistake somewhere, they throw out everything that notary notarized, regardless of all the signatures being valid on all the other sheets, if a petitioner makes a mistake somewhere. If they signed or circulated for a candidate in the primary, and they're not allowed to get signatures on a Libertarian petition. And it just goes on and on and on. Actually in your state, Maryland, they made us come back because we had gotten all the signatures, and they acknowledged we had enough signatures. But then they decided to enforce a rule where people wouldn't count if they hadn't put their middle initials and little petty stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so we had to come back and get more. And the real kicker was that the people who had signed before would not be allowed to sign again if they made a mistake in the way they signed it. So they acknowledged that these people were voters, and they acknowledged that they were identifying who these voters were, but that their signature would still not count. That, to me, is just, you know, so blatant. It's completely ridiculous.
Let's actually continue talking about some of those changes and some of those misenforcements, as well as other parts about access, right after this break. Right now we're talking with Paul Frankel. He's an expert on ballot access petitioning. He's also a former member of the Libertarian National Committee. After this break, we're going to talk a little bit more about how ballot access is getting in the way of your right to vote your conscience. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Family caregivers face some tough challenges every day in caring for a partner, parent, child, sibling, friend, neighbor, or even coworker. You are there to provide the care that these people need after everyone else has gone home. Family Caregivers Unite with Dr. Gordon Atherley will provide you with a social networking experience. You'll hear from experts and others who are experiencing the same things, and together you will promote a common cause. Tune in to Family Caregivers Unite, live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
The world we live in has become a crazy place. Poverty is at an all-time high in the wealthiest nation on Earth. We keep calling on government to save us with new programs. And now, we have more people using food stamps than any time in our history. This problem continues to get worse. The answer to poverty is in our homes, churches, and communities, and through our children. Get the answers from The Mickey Ellison Show, Wednesdays at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. In order for libertarian candidates to be able to cut government, either by getting elected and cutting government or pressuring other parties to cut government, for that to work, you need to be able to vote libertarian. So what the other parties are doing is they're trying to find ways to make that impossible. With me today is Paul Frankel. He's going to talk about some more of the ways that Democrats and Republicans are trying to prevent libertarians from voting for libertarians. It sounds insane, I know, but it is common practice throughout the country. Paul, what are some of the other areas or some of the other ways in which Democrats and Republicans are trying to block people from being able to vote libertarian?
Well, they're trying to prevent the message from being heard by inventing rules to keep us out of debates. And okay. when we meet their thresholds for whatever percentage we're supposed to poll at, they'll move the goalposts and say, well, now we come up with this new rule. You also have to have raised $250,000. Or, oh, I'm sorry, did we say 5%? We meant 15%. Sorry, yes, as a typo. Kentucky was one. We were suing them, and I believe there's an appeal going on where public television, you know, actually government tax money supported broadcasting did that to us, but commercial stations have done it as well, and you might say that they're private and they can do what they want, but many of them receive money from the government or various other things as well, so... And it's a public election, so they're actually engaged in kind of a campaign donation to two of the candidates versus all the other candidates on the ballot when they sponsor debates.
I mean, that kind of coverage has a very clear market value. It's not something we have to guess at. I mean, look at the price of, like, how much would that much media coverage cost? I mean, that's a clear campaign donation. There's no question about it.
Oh, yeah. We're suing the... Commission on Presidential Debates as well, because they have a status as supposedly a nonpartisan educational foundation, but in reality they're made up of only Democrats and Republicans who get together and invent new rules. As soon as Ross Perot was able to crack their previous rules, they moved the goalposts and invented new rules to make sure that there wouldn't be anyone except Democrats and Republicans in the presidential debates, and there haven't been since then. When they have a sponsor that wants to have other people in the debates, they switch the sponsor, because it used to be that the League of Women Voters would stand up to them and say, no, we want a little bit more inclusive debates with clear rules that would at least make it possible for someone else to get in them. So they said, okay, well, what we're going to do is not have the league sponsor the debates anymore. We'll just have a new thing called the Commission on Presidential Debates, which will pretend is a nonpartisan educational foundation, except it's made up of people exclusively picked by the Democratic and Republican national committees.
Paul, what should a person do if they want to get involved? And I mean, what can the average person do if they want to put an end to this kind of just ridiculous abuse?
Well, there's a lot of things we can do. We are lobbying the state legislatures in numerous states to improve ballot access. More than half the states have actually made ballot access improvements within the last several decades, which is one of the major reasons why the Libertarian Party, after this last election, has the best retention, or in other words, the number of states where we won't have to petition to get our presidential ticket on the ballot for 2016. So it would have been a lot worse if it hadn't been for the legislative changes we've already been able to make. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of other legislative changes that we are trying to lobby for, so we need people to write to legislators, to visit with their legislators, to call them, email them, fax them, whatever methods of contact they find possible, to educate the media on this as well. And we've had a lot of media that have actually done good editorials about it, but we need lots of letters to the editor. We need to raise awareness of the stuff going on, because a lot of people don't know about it. When I get signatures to get on the ballot, I run into people every single day that just don't believe me. They said, there's no way anybody who wants to get on the ballot can get on the ballot. I didn't know about it. When I first ran into it, I was shocked that we needed something like 40,000 signatures plus a lot more, because they won't be all counted as valid.
Exactly.
Just to get on the state ballot. I was completely astounded. Like, how can that be in America? I felt like I was back in the Soviet Union. I left there when I was 7 years old. Well, I had a flashback, like, oh wow, I just woke up and we never left.
Paul, I mean, this information has been so powerful, and so I mean, it's just, I mean, I think it's so important that people are learning this information. Is there a website or somewhere that people should go if they want to get more involved in this process?
Yeah, there's several. Ballot-access.org is Ballot Access News. Mm-hmm. Richard Winger's been putting it out since the 1980s, and he knows way more than I do about this stuff. He's a tremendous expert on it and has all the latest legislation everything that's pending. There's also bad bills coming down all the time too, which we have to fight.
Absolutely.
We need people to lobby for good bills, to help stop bad bills, to educate the public. We've got independentpoliticalreport.com, which I write for. Mm-hmm. We cover the alternative or so-called third parties and independent candidates. And we often have news about different ballot access struggles and bills and things like that. And also other news and discussions.
Excellent.
Of related matters. And OurAmericaInitiative.com. Mm-hmm. Which is the group that our last presidential candidate, Gary Johnson, is the honorary chairman of. And it's actually a nonpartisan group which does lobbying. We were also suing the Commission on Presidential Debates. I'm the co-deputy director for the Southern and Eastern Regions and the state director in Alabama. We were also doing lobbying in a lot of states to help improve ballot access laws as well as pass other, small-L libertarian legislation.
Excellent. Well, Paul, thank you so much for being on the show and sharing all this excellent information about ballot access.
Thank you for having me.
Guys, we've just been listening to Paul Frankel, ballot access expert and former member of the Libertarian National Committee. To learn more about the Libertarian Party, go to lp.org. You've been listening to Libertarians Working for You. This is your host, Arvind Vora. See you next week.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvind Vora again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.